Welcome to the next episode of FieroCast. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the elephant in the room that nobody really wants to hear or talk about, and that is Fierofires, or we refer to them as the hot ones. So we will get in more in depth than that, but I am your host, Mike Croyer, and you are listening to the newest episode of FieroCast, the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. You can find past FieroCast episodes at FieroFocus.com or on our Facebook page. We would like to thank our FieroCast supporters for this 2022 season. It is the Fiero Store, Rodney Dickman, Bonter Solutions, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, GoldenEye Graphic, and the NIFE Store. If you would like to become a supporter of FieroCast, all you have to do is just shoot me an email with your company information and just a little blurb of what your company does and what it can do for the Fiero community, and I will make a commercial for you, and that's all you got to do. So if you want to become a supporter, I said just go ahead and email me, and I will get everything put together for you. This episode of FieroCast is brought to you by the Midwest Fiero Clubs and GoldenEye Graphic. Have you asked yourself, what is the Midwest Fiero Clubs? Well, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, which is also a region of the AACA, is a dedicated group of enthusiasts whose passion is to promote and preserve the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. The Midwest Fiero Clubs consists of members from existing Fiero clubs across the U.S. The Midwest Fiero Club's intent is to support member clubs and promote the Fiero-related events that they offer. The intent is to enable enthusiasts to discover events in their areas other than their own, and to warrant participation. This has created a tighter-knit Fiero community of the owners and created some great regional shows that may not have otherwise happened. So, how do I find out about them? You can visit the website at midwestfieroclubs.aaca.com or just Facebook them at Midwest Fiero Clubs AACA and like them. All right. Thank you to our FieroCast supporters for this episode. We do appreciate it and thank you very much. So before we get into, we'll call this episode the Hot Ones, just to give you a update on what's coming up on the next couple episodes, we have the next episode. We're going to cover the events for the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiasts, as well as some of the other events in the Midwest that are going to be going on. Very, very full season this year with car shows across the Midwest, out east, as well as a couple cruise nights that we'll be doing and a couple other driving events that we'll be doing as well. So it is a very full and packed spring, summer, and we'll say even early fall. So you don't want to miss the next episode, as that will cover that. And our July episode of FieroCast, we are going to sit down with Jen Goss and maybe another couple special guests to see what the upcoming 40th anniversary show to be held in Pontiac, Michigan next year in July, and what we can expect from this big, awesome show. All the latest and up-to-date information we will have in that episode. So please stay tuned for that. That's coming up in July. So, all right. Well, what do? Let's light the fires and get this episode started. Everybody is entitled to their own opinion. However, what about opinions that are not accurate? When you attend a car show, you probably aren't anticipating having to defend your car. you want to talk about your car, things you've done to your car, things that maybe nobody else knows about a Fiero. But when we Fiero owners are at a car events or even just park somewhere with our cars, we often find ourselves having to educate the public on the virtues of a Fiero. And unfortunately, we got to perform damage control 30 to 35, even 40 years after the Fiero debuted. And the one topic on which the public often needs educating on is that of the Fiero engine fires. An engine fire is a terrible occurrence, particularly if it results in complete destruction of one's car or injury to those involved. It is not the intention here to minimize that experience, but to explore what happened and why that media and public reacted as they did, which can help in understanding the events leading up to the Fiero engine fires, how the fires were perceived, and the demise of the Fiero. So, during the early 1980s, a small, dedicated group of engineers and designers within Pontiac worked diligently to bring this commuter car to the market. Without recounting that process, it is helpful and very, you know, to understand that this group was working with undesirable conditions in terms of trying to not only bring an innovative vehicle to the market with an extremely limited budget, but to change the way cars were designed, engineered, and built. All of this took place while fighting the adversity of some within GM who, at the very least, could not have cared less about the proposed project, and others who worked against the Fiero coming to fruition in an effort to preserve the exclusively of their own sporty products. Therefore, funding of the Fiero was not as ambient as the funding of other vehicles that had the full backing of GM. So, additionally, a basic understanding of how the automotive business operates is helpful. Unlike the past, where an automobile manufacturer may have some of its own foundry, forest, and wood shop or glass making facilities, current manufacturers actually make few, if any, of those parts that make up our vehicles or their vehicles. The manufacturers prepare designs and write up specifications of the parts and then solicit bids from part suppliers to produce those parts. The margins for the suppliers are relatively small, but they make their money by producing hundreds of thousands of these parts. So it's in simplified terms, if they realize $1 profit on, say, a connecting rod, and each engine requires four connecting rods, they make $4 profit on each car. The automobile manufacturer produces 500,000 cars, and that supplier earns a $2 million profit on that one part. So it behooves the parts supplier to make the parts for at least amount of money possible to maximize their profit. If they can't reduce production costs by 10 cents in the above, the example I just gave, they will net an additional $200,000 in profits. So their numbers or methods for reducing production costs, and one method is something referred to as a value engineering. And you're saying, well, what's a value engineering? Well, value engineering is alleged to mean reducing the cost of an item by engineering it to the tightest tolerances possible. So, in other words, removing all the factors of safety by engineering a part to meet the minimal requirements set by the purchaser, which in this case is the car manufacturer. In reality, value engineering often results in inferior products. At this point, we are probably wondering what the economic lesson is and what it has to do with the Fiero engine fires. There is a direct connection, okay, between value engineering and the fires that damage the Fiero's reputation. So value engineering is not just practiced by parts suppliers. The car manufacturer's own engineers also value engineer their products to keep costs down. If an automobile manufacturer can reduce production costs by even a penny here and there, they can reap millions in profits. Additionally, car manufacturers have an interest in making the parts lighter to increase fuel economy, make an engine run more smoothly, and make the car handle better. So if the engineer has value engineered a part, and then the supplier has also value engineered a part, that part may become dangerously close to not being able to perform its intended purpose. In other words, by reducing the cost and removing value, the part no longer has a factor of safety, and it doesn't require much of the outside influence to cause the part to fail. So now we're going to circle back around, and the Fiero engine fires were directly related to an essential engine part subject to such an outside influence. So now we're going to go back and go to the early part of Fiero production. The Fiero engineers realized that some of these connecting rods being manufactured by GM's Saginaw Foundry Division were very defective. As with most automotive production, the faster the parts or vehicles could be manufactured, the more money that can be made, and the foundry had little incentive to change, viewing the failure of the connecting rods as a Pontiac warranty problem. Reportedly, the foundry responded with that between 60 to 90% of the connecting rods exhibited no defects, so there was no need for a recall. Pontiac's more conservative view was that 1 to 4 of the connecting rods going into the cars were defective, meaning that it was possible for one 2.5-liter engine to have 1 to 4 defective connecting rods. Well, the foundry's attitude, which was historically common in automotive manufacturing, went against everything the Fiero team was attempting with the Fiero, which was to produce a very high-quality, low-priced vehicle in which all of the participating manufacturer members had a stake. Well, as soon as the Pontiac engineers discovered this problem, they urged the foundry to stop sending the defective connecting rods. But the foundry was being paid by the tonnage of parts shipped, not by how many were made, but by the tonnage, and therefore had little incentive to spend money to resolve Pontiac's warranty problem. So, as these parts were coming in, now we jump to October of 83. While GM and Pontiac were testing the Fieros at the GM Milford Proving Grounds, two Fieros had experienced engine fires. These fires were abruptly contributed to the coolant leaks resulting from improperly installed hose clamps. By all the first year sales accounts, the Fiero was a success. However, GM would soon realize that they had a problem more severe than any faulty hose clamps that were on the Fiero. While Pontiac was attempting to resolve the problem of these hairline cracks in the connecting rods, Fieros equipped with the four-cylinder engines began to experience problems due to broken connecting rods. We're looking at them, but they're also happening in the public's view. A connecting rod that breaks at high speed has a tendency to cause more damage to the surrounding components because the engine does not stop running at the high speeds. It doesn't freeze when something breaks despite the failure of the connecting rod. These broken rods could and did punch holes into the cylinder walls, allowing oil to exit the engine onto the hot surfaces. Just imagine that you're driving, going at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden, snap, boom, and you're still able to coast and drive the car, but not knowing that you have a connecting rod going through your engine wall. You know, that's one, safety, but, you know. So these broken rods, theoretically, a rod could break under normal operating conditions without any additional outside influence. However, through the investigations of the failures, often revealed that the quality of oil in the engine was low. That's why they were breaking. Think about that for a second. They're low quality parts, but they don't want to admit it, but they're going to say your oil engine is low, and that's why it broke. So various iterations of the Iron Duke, the 2.5, the four-cylinder engine, had been around since 77 and had proven to be a very reliable but somewhat noisy workhorse engine. And this engine had found use in various Pontiacs, Chevrolets, Oldsmobiles, and Buick vehicles, as well as a number of AMC cars and even a Jeep CJ. This was a very proven engine and was not prone to having problems. The difference in the Fiero was that the installation of the engine in the Fiero required a redesigned oil pan that reduced oil capacity by almost a quart without recalibrating the dipstick. For the revised oil pan, many cars were operating with an insufficient quality and quantity of oil. It would not require the oil level to be very low, therefore internal damage was initiated. There have been two other causes of engine fires, but they are still putting it on, the oil pan being reduced to hold less oil than is needed for that engine. The other two causes is heat damage to the engine wiring harness in the 84 and cracked engine blocks resulting from over torquing of the head bolts. It is believed that most of the fires resulted from a defective connecting rod. However, although a variety of modifications were ultimately performed, including relocating the wiring harness away from the exhaust manifold in later cars. By the close of the 85 model year, GM had received over 100 reports of engine fires in customer cars, most of which were in 84. Encouraged by the strong sales, GM was reluctant to issue a recall. Fearful that such a move would seriously damage the Fiero's reputation and sales. You would think it would be opposite. Take care of the problem, resolve the problem, have a better vehicle, have a safer vehicle, have a better vehicle for people to purchase. Not just sit on it, take care of it. So, with them being reluctant, because it would hurt their reputation and their sales, Pontiac began treating the engine fires as a warranty repair. But when customers no longer wanted their Fieros, GM and its insurance company negotiated payments to the owners that required the customers to sign a non-disclosure agreement in order to receive the compensation. The reports of the engine fires continued to escalate, and by the end of the summer of 86, the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration finally opened up an investigation. Philip W. Davis, then the NHTSA's highest ranking defective investigator, demanded information from GM regarding this problem and stated, and I quote, "This appears to be a serious problem," end quote. GM, not wanting to spoil the Fiero's initial success, attempted to handle the problem in a manner that may have caused more damage than it did to solve it. Still attempting to de-emphasize the seriousness of the problem, GM's C. Thomas Terry, manager of product investigations at the time, wrote to the NHTSA, and I quote, "Any time an individual experiences a vehicle fire, it can be a very traumatic experience. In the case of the engine compartment fires, the evidence indicates the actual risk to motor vehicle safety is minimal," end quote. And in an attempt to diminish concerns, GM indicated that the problem was the result of Fiero owners not being diligent in maintaining their engine's oil level. Dave Hodgins, a GM spokesman, stated that, and I quote again, "If you ran out of oil and then coupled with some aggressive driving, perhaps maybe not changing the oil very often, you end up with a broken rod, and that's where the connecting rod came in. It is still the owner's responsibility to check the oil," end quote. The NHTSA came back and said, however, who was having none of that and required Pontiac to issue a recall on all 84 Fieros for the engine bay modifications. Still having to minimize any bad publicity, GM issued the recall notice late in the afternoon on Wednesday before Thanksgiving Day, 1987. 3 years after the Fiero made its debut. 4 years. But they still knew about it. Pontiac issued multiple recalls related to the engine fires. The actual modifications depended on when the car was produced and were based on the NHTSA campaign, which, if you just want to take a note, that campaign ID number is 89V as in Victor 23200. And that ID campaign number states, and I quote, "Due to an interaction of the engine compartment environment and maintenance of service-related factors, there is a risk of engine compartment fires. The engine compartment fire can spread to the passenger compartment and injure occupants. Correct or install new engine components to prevent unreasonable fire risk," end quote. So all of the Fieros recalled were all four cylinders. And as stated, the modifications depended on the car's production date and included the following. Number one, check engine oil at every fill. Label affixed decal to the inside of the fuel door. So every time you fill your car with gas, you have to check your engine oil. Now, if you go back 10 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, when you pulled into a gas station, the gentleman would fill you up, tell you to pop your hood, check your fluids, check your engine oil, say, hey, your fluids are good. Just close your hood, pay for gas, leave. Or you'd say, hey, your engine's low. I can put some oil in there for you. We don't do that anymore. You got to depend on yourself. So, number two, check coolant system. Fill procedure. Put label affixed to bottom of surface of deck lid. Number three, check engine oil. Change oil frequently. Put this label affixed to the bottom surface of the deck lid. Note that this is not listed in the service bulletin and may have been included on all other recalled cars. Number four, revise the 84 Fiero maintenance schedule booklet. Although listed for the 84, this was also issued to the owners of an 85 as well. Number five, two supplements to the 84 Fiero owner's manual. Again, although it was listed in 84, this was also listed in the owner's manual of 85 as well. Number six, remove all portions of the deck lid grill cover. Number seven, remove all rubber dust shield at leading edge of deck lid. Number eight, installation of heat protective tape wrap on engine wiring harness extending from the thermostat to the bulkhead connector. Number nine, install new cylinder head bolts. Number 10, install a new exhaust manifold. 11, install new oxygen sensor and exhaust manifold. 12, install lock tabs on outbound manifold runner bolts and bolts shall be torqued to the new values. 13, install new dipstick tube. 14, install new exhaust pipe seal. 15, remove starter motor heat shield. 16, install new heat stove. 17, check coolant level and add coolant as needed. 18, pressure test the coolant system. 19, inspect cooling system for leaks. 20, inspect coolant hose and replace if necessary. 21, inspect cooling fan function, replace relay, replace coolant switch, replace wiring of fan as required. 22, inspect for significant fluid leaks, repair all leaks forward of catalytic converter. 23, inspect for pressure and presence of starter shield, converter shield, muffler shield, and bulkhead shield. 24, inspect lubrication system for oil leaks, repair leaks including rocker cover gaskets and PCV breather, but not oil pan gasket. 25, install larger oil filter. If you need to know, it's P as in Paul, F as in Frank, 5-2, versus the current smaller one, P as in Paul, F as in Frank, 47. 26, inspect oil level. Add oil as required, not needed, but required. 27, inspect transmission oil cooler. 28, inspect ignition system. 29, inspect engine wiring components. And number 30, at owner's request, paint the bulkhead components visible through deck lid grills black. Those are all the items listed to be done as a modification depending on the car's production date for the service-related recall. In a final effort to deny any fault, Mr. Terry issued on December 15th of 1989 in a letter to Michael Brownlee, director of the Office of Defects Investigation of the NHTSA, which states that GM was complying with the additional NHTSA required recall in accordance with the NHTSA's language. But, and I quote, the actions undertaken by General Motors are not to be interpreted as admissions that these vehicles contain a defect or a safety-related defect, end quote. After further notifications of owners to and for the recalls, should not be considered admissions that we have determined a defect or safety-related defect existed in the 84 to 88 Fieros equipped with the four-cylinder engines. With our in-depth inspection of the 37 84 to 88 four-cylinder Fiero fire incidents and test conducted by General Motors and outside engineering experts indicated to GM that these fires were not caused by any manufacturing or design defect in their product. Instead, from the studies, we have concluded that improper owner maintenance and improper owner service procedures continue to be the principal causes of engine component fires in all four-cylinder Fieros. The vehicle population for the recall included 244,000 cars, and they looked at 37. So out of the 244,000 cars, they're saying it's all owner problem for improper checking of the oil and improper checking of the vehicle maintenance. So that's their determining factor. Not the part. The actual number of cars that experience engine fires varies depending on who is reporting the figure. Internet automotive news outlet CarBuzz reported the engine fires were occurring at even 20 per month, which is an unrealistic number. But the NHTSA received 148 reports of fires that included 6 injuries, some of which were due to people attempting to extinguish the fires themselves. But Pontiac's own reporting included 260 reports of engine fires, which included 10 injuries, which was an enormously reported as representing only 7% of all Fieros produced, and a number that the media has enjoyed, you know, overblowing it. But other sources only reported 135 engine fires. So out of the 367,000 Fieros that were made, the number of engine fires kind of varies that were actually reported. The Fiero is not the only car to have experienced engine fires. And that's true to this date. I mean, there's still cars that have engine fires. They're not Fieros. And they're current. The Fiero is not the only car to have experienced engine fires. In 2014, the 785 Porsche GT3, or 100% of the total production, received replacement engines due to connecting rod problems that resulted in engine fires. In 2013, Ford had recalled over 11,000 escapes with the 1.6-liter engine due to the possibility of engine fires. In 2012, 89,000 Mini Coopers were recalled due to the possibility of engine fires. 475,000 2010 through 2012 of the Chevy Cruze were recalled for the same reason. Going back to 2011, 32,000 BMW 7 Series, 5 Series, X5s, X6s were recalled for also the possibility of engine fires. There have been many more, including Subaru, Audi, Nissan, Mercedes, Chrysler. The Fiero was not the only car to experience engine fires. And although the overall number of cars recalled was high, the actual quantity of engine fires was not. So when somebody walks up to you and says, "Huh, are these the cars that start on fire?" You could say, "Yeah, but however many more cars, not Fieros, had engine fires." Check your facts, dude. Learn, read. The engine fires in the Fieros is few compared to the many. A Time magazine photo essay entitled "A Brief History of Pontiac" included a number of entries from 1926 to 2006. Not all of the entries are favorable, but the Fiero entry is titled "Up in Flames." The copy states, and I quote, "No, Fiero does not mean fire in Spanish or Italian, but unfortunately, that's the word many Americans associate with the two-seat sports car Pontiac introduced in 1984. The small, sleek coupe was immensely popular and helped launch a wave of two-seaters into the marketplace, but its engine was prone to spontaneous fires, prompting multiple recalls and a halt to the production just after 5 years. GM eventually recalled every Fiero it produced." End quote. What is it about the Fiero that has caused so many in the media, the public, to not only report and not always accurate news about the Fiero fires? As stated in the Time magazine piece, the engines were not prone to spontaneous fires, and not every Fiero produced was recalled. That description conjures up images of Fieros parked on the street bursting into flames. Contrary to many sources, the engine fires were not the cause of GM's decision to stop production of the Fiero. The bad publicity, whipped into hysteria by the media, one, didn't help, but it wasn't the cause of its demise. The Fiero is a great car. It's a good car. It's a lovable car. And as evidenced by the numbers of cars that were still on the road, it's one of the most loved cars. Perhaps we Fiero owners can put this unfortunate chapter of the Fiero's history to rest by extolling the Fiero's virtues and setting the record straight on the Fiero engine fires. So, next time somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, are those the cars that catch on fire?" You could say, "Yes, they were. It was taken care of. They were fixed. And now they're the most lovable car on the streets. They are our cars." All right. Well, thank you. That was a very informational and emotional topic, the hot ones, because that is one thing that just, it does annoy me when people do come up to me and say, "Hey, isn't this the car that started on fire?" No, this car did not start on fire. You were thinking of the early model 84 years, and the problem was taken care of. They are not a fire-prone car. So, yeah, I know people are going to keep coming up to us and saying, "Hey, are these cars that caught on fire?" But all you do is brush them off your shoulder and just let them keep thinking that. They're not very automotive history up, you know. Yeah, so. All right. Well, again, I hope you enjoyed this Hot Ones episode. This podcast was produced by Mike Croyer and is a production of the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiasts. This episode of FieroCast was written by Christopher Sass. He is our Fiero Focus editorial member on our editorial Fiero Focus staff. Again, thank you for joining me tonight. I am your host, Mike Croyer, and thank you for listening to the newest episode of FieroCast. This is episode number 30, and it is the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. If you would like more information or have any ideas on future FieroCast, you can email me at mkroyer@fierofocus.com. Send them in to me. I will reply back, and I will either ask you to join me on a FieroCast, or I will have one written up and do a FieroCast without you. Either way, send me your information. So, in the meantime, remember to keep Fieroing, and good night, Fiero owners, wherever you are.